Signal received.
Phone's off.
So, phones are off. Mine and Nathan's are on vibrate because we have Commissioner Edwards on Skype, and if he loses us, he'll call one of us and we'll set him up on some other way. So, everybody else should be on airplane mode. I think we're ready to call the regular meeting of the San Juan County Public Hospital District Number 1 Board of Commissioners meeting to order. It's Wednesday, September 25th. It's 3 p.m. As I said, Dr. Edwards is attending via Skype, and at his request, I'm chairing the meeting. It's a little too difficult to do it from a computer. So let's go on to the first item is agenda approval. So will the board request a motion to approve the agenda as written?
So moved. Second.
Okay, discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, agenda is approved. And the consent agenda, another motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Call for a vote. Ayes?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Appleton?
Aye.
Okay, it passes unanimously. Next item on the agenda is the... San Juan County PhD number 1 operations report, Pamela.
Yes. For the month of August, total receipts were $12,798.86. Most of those were property tax revenues at $10,672.27. There was leasehold tax of $2,096.41. And some timber harvest tax of $30.18. So the total cash available at the end of August was $810,218.80. In disbursements, we had $20,674.63, which were all warrants processed in the month of August. We didn't have any public records expense that came in August, and we still have had, through the month of August, just 14 public records for the 2019 year. For your financials, if you look at the revenue and expenditure by fund, you will notice that the county still has not published our revised budget figures, and they apologized to me. It was an oversight that they didn't get those done. They were having a lot of turnover in their positions and just things happening, and they didn't get recorded. But she assured me that they would be recorded in the next week or two, and that in September we would be looking at our revised 2019 budget figures. So on your warrant summary on the bottom where it says 2019 budget, you'll know that it's changed to the revised budget because it'll say 2019 revised budget. So you'll know that the figures are matched up against those. So until that happens, our line items are a little bit out of balance, but we're still well under our expenses. And when we receive our property tax revenues starting to come in next month, September, and then, October, when we get our largest amount, then the revenue side will balance out to around budget. And does anybody have any questions about the financials?
So they steal EMS's best employees and then tell us they can't get the work done? Is that what I just heard
That's
you say?
About what happened, yes. They still had turnover, but I don't know. But I did make an appointment and talk to Mylene and told them that we have a new wonderful EMS administrative assistant, and Heather has assured us that she likes it here and she is staying, so don't even try to recruit her because she's staying.
Yes.
Yeah. So. They also said they have a joke around their offices too, that about back and forth of employees, not only in our organization but the island, because the island is so small, you know, with people trying to work. So,
is that a wage thing?
It's,
I mean, really, is it
benefits? I think mostly it's benefits because they offer good benefits.
Why would you leave the county? It probably has the best benefit to go someplace else. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me.
Maybe they're moving departments.
Anyway, yeah, it's just, it's something to be considered the next time we hire someone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I will go on to operations for August. Life-wise, with Premier, we're still talking with them, with their officials, Ann Preston, the superintendent for Lopez and Orcas Hospital Districts, and myself have been working closely with their officials to try to line up times when they can come to the island and communicate with all the stakeholders, you know, Board of Health, PIMC officials, fire chiefs, MPDs, and that probably will be happening on October 15th and October 16th. They've committed to those two dates. October 15th, they'll be on Orcas Island, and then October 16th will be the San Juan Island Day, and they will visit the Board of Health meeting, fire chiefs, MPDs, hospital district, PIMC officials. So they're making a really big effort to get to know and visit everyone while they're rolling out their plans for 2020.
That's October 16th.
October 16th. And we'll talk about a little bit more about that date later on in the agenda. Okay. And then also on September 23rd, the Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation had the meeting with Health Facilities Planning and Development to get the results back from the senior survey that happened the month of August through September 15th. And the company that did that analysis was Health Facilities Planning and Development. They're out of Seattle. And they focused on San Juan County residents that were over the age of 70 or caregivers of someone over the age of 70. For that survey, they did it by phone, paper survey. A lot of people spent a lot of effort trying to get out, and people that did not use a computer, were not computer savvy to do the websites and all, but to reach them by paper surveys. We had volunteers, some right here in the audience, that went to the senior centers and helped people fill out their surveys. So. They were expecting 400. They really wanted about 300 people, and they got nearly 400 people that participated. So that was 31% above what they were statistically looking for to establish a really good survey. The workers were very impressed by the San Juan County residents, that they were so enthused and so excited to take the survey, and so the results were, they got really good statistical data to proceed on forming the next steps of what senior care services should be. We will have a meeting with the Health Facilities Planning and Development with the Inter-Island Healthcare Foundation on October 7th. It's a couple of weeks from now. And the company will give us a cover letter and a summary of the survey results in a more readable packet and explanation for people. And an updated budget for the feasibility study where it's at now budget-wise, and a financial pro forma on now we can take it to the accounting companies to give us some details of what it might cost to do some of the things that the long-term care survey committee people recommended, like the microhousing and the PACE projects and things like that. So with the data collected from the surveys, they'll be able to put that in the pro formas and have some information from that. And also we will be getting a draft memorandum of understanding so that we can look at that and have it to work with the other care organizations on the island, such as the Board of Health and Peace Island and all three hospital districts, so that when the work starts, we will have those in place. And so I also wanted to, again, thanks to all of you that helped participate in the survey or helped others participate in the survey, because it was a huge success, and they wanted to pass along thank yous to everyone. And my last item is a bit of good news also, is that Dr. William Will, he goes by Will, House will be taking over Dr. Gossam's practice in, I believe, January of 2020. He and his wife, Sherry, they have been visiting the islands for over 20 years, and they look forward to relocating to the islands. They're from Maine, and they have two daughters. So this is very exciting news for San Juan Healthcare, Dr. Gossam's patients, and our island community to have someone come in and take over that. And Dr. Appleton has some more information about the family and Dr. House that he'd like to share.
Yeah, actually, they haven't been visiting the islands for 20 years. 20 years ago, they put a deposit on property on Orcas.
Okay.
And while they were trying to close, Will, who is a Will House, Will's first name, House, like, his father had a stroke, and he went to visit his father and thought that there could be more done medically. So he decided, he was a computer engineer at that time, and he decided to go to medical school. His wife supported him. She's a teacher. She's a wonderful person. And then they ended up on the East Coast, but they've always wanted to get back here. So he has come back here. He also has a master's, I understand, in pharmacology, and has some, I feel, and Mike Sullivan field. Mike's interviewed him also. A real good basis. He went to Tulane Medical School, a wonderful family. You're all going to like him. Sherry is absolutely infectious with upbeat stuff. So I am just excited to have them here. They've already rented a place, and they're starting to look to set down roots, which I think is going to be great for the community.
And special appreciation to you, Dr. Appleton. Thank you for the effort you took and the time you took with the House family to welcome them and introduce them to the community and tour them about. It's much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And that is all for my operations report, unless you have any further questions.
Or comments. Thank you so much, Dr. Appleton, for your participation. I understand you were fundamental in recruiting and retaining this gentleman. And also, Pam, the HRSA grant, could you mention that? That just passed me by in terms of the consortium.
No, I did not mention that. We will have an update of further information on October 7th, but there is a possibility of a HRSA grant that's due in around Thanksgiving time to help with expenses for considering and promoting the governance and areas of that for the long-term care. So that is an exciting piece too, also. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dr. Edwards.
Thanks, ma'am.
So October the 7th, we're going to get our first big update from these folks. The senior group.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Thank you, Pam. So next up is Carl for the San Juan EMS operations report.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I do have my report for you. I want to kind of hit some of the highlights just in terms of our departmental stats. 120 calls for August, which brings our total up to 831 responses through August 31st, and that's 54 more calls than the same time last year, which is about a 7% increase. So our average number of responders, 4.1. Again, that includes paramedics as well as paid staff and volunteers, all of them. 22 transports for Island Air, 7 involving airlift, and nothing for the Navy or the Coast Guard. And I've reported our response times. Overall, looking at all of our responses, the average response time was 10 minutes and 16 seconds. I go ahead and break down in terms of our percentages for what is considered rural response, suburban response, and urban response. And I'm starting to realize that reporting on a rural response, which technically we are for this entire county, is not something that is doing us a whole lot of good. 45 minutes, that's great, I think, for our outer island responses. I want to take a look at that and start tracking it. But as far as what happens on the island, I don't think there's any reason to track that. I mean, we're generally well within that response time. I would like to focus our goal on getting that suburban response time across the island and really focus on meeting the urban response time within the town limits. So I think in the future, I'll be reporting that way. Again, with town, 94% of our calls are under 20 minutes, 84% under 10, so we're meeting the recommendations of the North Region. Mid-Island, 79% of the calls under 20, 38 under 10. We're close. Your goal is that 80% mark, and so I think we're going to keep working on that. North End, we were a little behind. 67% of our calls were under 20 minutes. I'd like to see if we can figure out something that is going to help us get and bring that more in line with that 20-minute response time. That's the goal that I'm shooting for. South End, this particular month, we managed to get 88% of our calls under that 20-minute response time. We had 4 outer island calls in the district, average response of 37 minutes, so we're under that 45-minute goal, which I think is admirable. And again, these numbers don't take into account extended waits for staging or a delayed ETA for airlift responding or the fact that we've got simultaneous calls going. So they're pretty raw numbers. Do you have any questions about response time, Jordan?
Are we finding that ambulances are rolling faster? I know this is based first responder, but are we finding that
yes,
they're rolling faster out the door from dispatch to
last month, I had statistics that were helped compiled by dispatch, mm-hmm. and we found that we have close to a 2-minute improvement in terms of what they call shoot times, uh-huh. which is from the time of page to the time the ambulance rolls. So given the first half of the year in 2019, which is when we had staff on, versus the first half of the year in 2018, almost, I think it's 1.7 was what the numbers were, and that was in last month's report. So the board kind of agreed that, because it's a rather time-consuming process on the part of dispatch, and we don't want to further burden those guys, we're going to hold off on reporting that until the end of the year, kind of an end-of-year summary, and see and get you some hard numbers that way, that tracking those shoot times. I think that's going to be great.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. So the average response time is first person there, if it's one person or two people or three people.
That's correct. It's time of arrival on scene. That's of whatever resource
whatever
that is.
It is. So it could be one person waiting for three. Okay.
Yes, and that's true. And it may be generally what we're finding statistically, it's usually the medic that arrives first. Oftentimes a volunteer who shows up on scene has difficulty in communications getting that message out mm-hmm. to dispatch because of the radio communications issues that we have. So whether that's, it's usually the ambulance for the paramedic who's the first one that responds to dispatch saying that they're on scene, and that's when we get our response time numbers to work with.
And your on-scene time, is that the same throughout the whole county, or is it different in the different regions?
You know, I haven't broken down on-scene time by region. I haven't looked at that, but I'd be happy to see if I can delve into the software and see if that's something that's easily reported. I think a lot of that on-scene time is more case-dependent than area-dependent.
And those 9 and 8 calls wouldn't be statistically significant, but 79 and 24 is your N would give you a statistically significant number there. I don't know what I would do with it if it was significantly off, but it would be interesting to know.
I'll see if I can, you know, start look in that data scene time, and you're looking by area? Dr. Appleton?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, just in town and Mid-Island. North End and South End, if they're 9 and 8 calls.
Okay, got it.
That's not statistics. Those wouldn't give you any number that you could actually deal with.
Town and Mid-Island.
No matter what number they get.
Right. And we have changed our reporting practice, and where we're forcing the report writer to say what area they were responding to.
Good.
So we're getting that taken care of. For the financials, we're 67% into the year. I've got the big numbers there. Our cash and reserves basically show us that we have about 6 months of operating expenses ready to go. But I'm going to turn the rest over to Chris. He's got better numbers for you than I do.
Yeah. One thing to update on the report is that our amended budget hasn't been pushed through yet on the county as well. So. Our comparing to budget, we're actually at the revenues at about 58% or 59% of budget. We're still waiting on that final check from GEMT.
No, that's showed up.
Did that show up
it
finally?
Did.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So that finally showed up. But it wasn't a lot. Right? I know that.
No.
That came this month.
Yes.
So that'll push us up to being along the lines of the revised budget. And then the budget expenditures were at 64%, so just a little under for the year. Overall, it was a pretty typical quiet month, but like I said, we have that big GEMT check coming in, and then property taxes are starting to roll in as well, that we'll see a big jump there.
So is any of this delayed by the county going when PAC does having her budget done in an appropriate time for the state?
Say what again?
Is any of this...
Doesn't have any impact with the state.
None?
No.
No, our next year budget, will it impact the timing of that and the amount of work that we have to do? It always seems like right at the end of the budget, the last couple of days, you know, there's a lot of electricity going on trying to get things finalized. Is the county delay going to affect that?
No, I don't think so.
In terms of them getting changes made in short staff? Hope not.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
I mean, there's very few departments that do revise amended budgets during the year. But they're really used to having to put in everybody's budgets at the end of the year. We just do amended budgets because we're required to as part of a hospital district. And this year it would make sense because things change dramatically, at least from a positive standpoint.
Are there any other questions regarding the finances? Great, I'll move on a little bit and give you some more updates. As far as the community, we had only one first aid class given the month of August. Partly because that's our busy time, and we tend not to schedule one. But that one was specifically for the coaches at the school, and so we're up to 353 community members who have taken part in a class of some sort. There's nothing to report as far as the local operations. The highlights, again, our paramedic Brian Nelson is still working with county dispatch, and we're at the point now where we're looking into it's a GPS puck is what they call it. And it's a little GPS tracking unit that plugs into the mobile data computer that then allows dispatch to track assets real time. And Ryan was able to borrow one, a spare one that they had, found that it was working really, really well. And we kind of coordinated with fire to say they're also looking at having that capability on their response rigs. So we're going to buy the necessary number. I think they come out to about $28-$30 a piece to make sure that we've got all our rigs that are so equipped with mobile data terminals to have that. We'll get the fire ones and we'll get a little savings in the bulk buy and we'll get those up to speed. Chief Collins and I are working cooperatively on budget issues, trying to figure out as we start to move into that 2020 budget. I mentioned a little bit about the resident MD program that's winding down. We were able to have one of, I think most of the resident doctors are finished with their rotation, and we were able to have a third year intern here. So that was exciting. That was great. Good news, our EMS ambulance license has been renewed. It went through without a hitch. We've got it. It's hanging on the wall, and we're good to go until 2021. So license has been renewed. The BLS aid license that was applied for by the fire district, that's going to be probably, that was submitted as well to the state and probably taken up at the regional EMS and Trauma Council meeting to see their recommendation for moving forward with that. So we haven't heard anything specifically in terms of where that's coming from, but hopeful that that's moving forward as well. We're also in the process of purchasing cardiac monitors. The life packs that we have are life pack 12s, and they are no longer supported either by maintenance contract or hardware or software updates, upgrades, parts. And so that money was allocated in the 2019 amended budget. And we were concerned about the fact that most big expenditures like that need several bids going out, but really in terms of that particular monitor, there's only a single source, and that's Stryker Physio. Nathan did some research for us to find out if it was necessary for us to go through that three-bid process or even pass a resolution to some extent of saying that we've looked at that. What the consensus was and what Nathan found was that we don't have to go through that formal process. However, I am going to make sure that we keep on file the quotes that we got from both Stryker and another manufacturer, Zoll, to look at those two things and have those ready if the auditors have any questions. We show that we did our due diligence. We've had discussions with Dr. Corsa and other responders in the county, Airlift being one of Lopez, Orcas Island, all are using the same Life Pack 15s, and so that's what we're all kind of figuring is our best bet.
So how much is a Life Pack 15 now?
It's Life Pack 15 version 4.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the most current one right now. Philips is another manufacturer, mm-hmm. but their most current model has been recalled, so they're not even selling them. Zoll's the other model there, and their model, while still a very good one, is different enough so that part of our concern was our volunteers often are part of that process of manipulating, changing screens, helping the medics get the information they want showing up on that monitor, and the learning curve is very, very different. It's a different type of unit. Has some more features in terms of monitoring either venous or arterial monitoring temperatures and pressures that we wouldn't be using. So the consensus was that the physio, the light back, is a better choice for us.
So the Zoll head?
Yes.
Because it usually does.
Yes.
Cadillac-ish.
Yeah.
And how much are the light back 15.4s?
I think they're coming to just under 30,000 each, but we're getting they're offering us a trade and a buyback on the 12s. And I'm sorry, I don't have those numbers with me, but I can get those for you.
It was 25.
Thank you, Rachel.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
25,000 each.
For the 15.4s.
The life pack 12s.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's about what we budgeted.
And the life expectancy of those is capital investment.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years?
Yeah, they're saying that they had been working on a new model, but they know it's at least 3 years out. So generally what they've done is there's support that happens well beyond the new model coming out. Mm-hmm. But they've offered us a technology kind of upgrade. They would depreciate, depending on the number of years, up to 3 years. If a new model comes out, that we would be able to apply credit if we chose to upgrade to the new models. The other things that I have for you, in terms of fatigue assessment, nothing to report. Naloxone, nothing to report. No, it hasn't been used by EMTs. No issues with our 24-hour shifting. The medical protocols. Dr. Corse is on top of looking at the ALS protocols. He's been aware of that. He's asked for input from our medics. McPrice continues to kind of spearhead that. The nice thing that we've figured out is our county trauma council approved the purchase of a phone app where we can actually have our protocols stored. If we make changes, those are done automatically, and it's an app on your phone. You got it, you download it, you take a look at it, you can search it. It's pretty slick. I just downloaded it for both the iPhone and the Android. It's working really well. So we're all kind of excited. As that got pushed out, it got pushed out to the chiefs. We're looking at Chief Havner, Chief Williams, myself, trying to see if it's buggy at all. I'm sorry, I don't mean to slight Chief Riggins over on Shaw, but everybody's looking at that. But so far, so good. And everybody's excited about that. And of course, as the ALS protocols come online, they'll be integrated into that, and that will be all searchable. So that's really good news. What else do I have for you? Community paramedicine, I wanted to highlight that we have a draft job description. I know Dr. Appleton had asked me about that, so that's in progress, and we have a draft. Not ready to share yet, but we're working on it. Director Volk put some work into that, and I haven't had a chance to review all of it yet, but that draft is there, and that's really good. I know you also, Dr. Appleton, had a concern about our insurance provider. I had a conversation with them, and they assure me that they have no issues, especially when they found out that we were working with Snow One and Chief Sean Maxwell, that we are partnered with them. We based a lot of our model and response on their model. They've been doing it for a long time.
And so they've worked with him before.
They have. And Gordon McElvaney says they view this community paramedicine as a risk reduction kind of thing. It keeps fewer 911 calls from happening, which is where the big liability is, mm-hmm. a code response. So they're all on board. They have no issues. So I definitely wanted to report on that for you. Our MPD supervising physician, obviously Dr. Corse is on board. He's been here, attended the last county EMS and Trauma Council meeting. He has agreed that he'll take over as our supervising physician here at San Juan Island EMS. Dr. Haysloop is very amenable to that, so she will be offering her resignation and Dr. Corse will be stepping up. I think the plan is that they'll have 1 month while they'll kind of work together. Both with the ALS training and then with the run reviews that we usually have monthly with our supervising physician. So everybody seems very excited about that.
Will we have a new contract for him?
Yes, we would.
Next month?
Yeah, and basically what I provided him was the same contract that Dr. Haysloop has. Mm-hmm. He's got no qualms or issues about that. He said there might be a couple of little tweaks somewhere, but substantially no changes. So that's all in process and looking good. I have a brief report about the fire integration, but I see that's on new business, so I think we'll talk about that when we get to that portion of new business. I do want to point out, though, that we have had many conversations individually, members of the steering committee, with especially elected officials. That was our first go-round. We talked with all of them. We talked with a couple of people from the Outer Islands. I know one of the issues that we're looking at with our, as we go through integration, is the difference between the hospital district boundary and the fire district boundary. Right now, we've had conversations with Stewart Island. We've talked with a gentleman from Camp Northwestern on John's Island. All the conversations we have are very positive. It certainly seems that most of the residents are very interested in becoming part of the fire district, which will help smooth the integration as we move forward. They're pretty stoked about it. We haven't heard much opposition anyway at all. The biggest thing is that their insurance rates are going to be positively affected. Without any plan or being part of a fire district or a response area, they have a very difficult time obtaining insurance. And just the fact that they become part of an area with a response plan, their insurance rating should go up, and they're all seem very, very positive. So that's been very good news, and we continue to work with that. Our timelines are kind of established. We know that our biggest drop-dead kind of timeline is when the EMS levy expires in 2022. Which means in 2021 there needs to be some decision about how we're going to fund EMS services, whether that's through a levy lid lift and an integrated fire kind of situation, a separate EMS levy, either collected by the fire district or collected by the hospital district. Those answers, you know, we've got time to come up with those answers, but that's what's kind of driving us right now in terms of timeline. And as I said, the BLS aid license applied to by fire. We're still waiting to hear, and we should know more after the North Region meeting. The last thing I have to report is that we have had some applications for the part-time administrative assistant for outreach. I think there are five candidates that they're in the process of interviewing. Director Volk, Executive Assistant Heather Vogel, and Katie English are going to be involved in that interview process, and hopefully we'll have somebody who shines as a candidate that we can hire and start getting some of the help that he's going to need. That pretty well is my report. Do you have any questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Very cool. So the next is audience participation. Do we have anybody who wants to do audience participation? If we do, can you raise your hand? We can see. We got one, two, three.